Welcome to the Ask an Expert podcast, hosted by Joshua Carlson, co-founder of the award-winning direct marketing agency, Propello Media. Ask an Expert is a show of candid conversations with proven business and thought leaders, talking about real problems, and more importantly, about real solutions you can use to benefit your own business. We hope you enjoy the honest and organic nature of each guest's conversation. So let's jump right in.
The riches are in the niches, says today's Ask an Expert. Hi, I'm Joshua Carlson, co-founder of Propello Media. Today, sit down with Vern Harnish. Vern is an international speaker, he's a best-selling author, and he's the co-founder of Young Entrepreneurs Organization, known as EO Today, that has over 14,000 international members. Today, we're going to talk about influencers and how Vern used this strategy of hitching your wagon to them early in his career. And we're not talking about influencers that we know, we're talking about aspirational influencers. Vern himself targeted people like Ronald Reagan, Steve Jobs, and Mark Cuban, and he's gonna talk about how he was able to connect to them to propel his business forward. Next, we're gonna talk about how you should be differentiating yourself, not just with your organization, but positionally in your marketplace. He's gonna give you tips on how you can do that if you haven't mastered that yet. And finally, we're gonna talk about the importance of separating marketing and sales. Vern talks about why this is important and how you can do this strategically. Now let's hear what Vern has to say. Vern, thank you so much for coming on our Ask an Expert series.
You bet. Glad to be here, Joshua.
All right, so I want to go back to the beginning. You actually founded Young Entrepreneurs Organization, commonly known as EO Today, but you started as a mechanical engineer, then got your MBA, and then started this. So I'm curious what you were seeing in the marketplace that spawned it. And then secondly, I'm curious back then, we're going back to 1987, so I know it's been a minute. What were you thinking it would become back then?
Yeah, well, I launched it all while I was finishing up my MBA, and it was Steve Jobs. He was the reason we launched the organization. I consider him really the original young entrepreneur. Just one of the things we did as a publicity stunt is we identified the top young entrepreneurs under the age of 30, and you had to be under 30 to originally get into YEO. And Bill Gates, at age 29, which was the cutoff, he was at a paltry $256 million at Microsoft. But people don't realize, he was only number four on the list. Number one on the list was Steve Jobs, same age, 29, at almost $2 billion. So I think people lose perspective that it's one of the reasons why Bill Gates always had to come down and see Steve. Steve never had to go up and see Bill.
Right.
Is Steve had 8x the revenue that Microsoft had back when both those guys were 29.
Right.
And it was an event that I hosted for Steve after being fired from Apple. It was at the Bonaventure Hotel. We had almost 1,200 young entrepreneurs from all over the world. I had young Michael Dell sitting there with Steve, and sure, Mark Cuban and Kevin Harrington, the infomercial guy, and Neil Balter, California Closets, and a whole bunch of others. And it was that night when I kind of then threw a party for the winners, Steve being number one on the list. And Steve was just kind of standing over in the corner. And I turned to my perpetual vice president, Greg Stem, the treasure hunter still today. And I said, look, there needs to be an organization for guys like Steve. And so, yeah, I always envisioned that it would be what it is today. And I'm excited for it to double again from 14,000 to 28,000 members globally. And it was really built on a very simple idea I got from a buddy of mine, Joe Mancuso, who said, it's okay to be independent, but no reason to be alone. And that's what I saw with Steve. And depression, as you know, is high among entrepreneurs. We're one of the highest rates of any cohort in the public. And so, Ben, it's been exciting to see that all these entrepreneurs have this place that they can call home and share their deepest, darkest secrets, confidentially.
Okay, so this is going to lead into my next one. So I'm tipping my hand a little bit, and maybe we regurgitate, but you're getting your MBA, you're throwing a massive event, and you just threw out some big powerhouse names. How does one go about getting all of these people into a room at such an early state in your career?
Yeah, so the key is always through people. You know, it's always a who question, not a how or a why question or any of the other gurus that think their question is first. It is who. And It was specifically Regis McKenna. I had read how Regis, the big marketing guru of Silicon Valley, was consulting with Steve from literally almost day one in Intel and Genentech and most of the folks in Silicon Valley. And so, look, I'm young, dumb, and broke, as they, you know, the song goes, here today. And I just cold called Regis's company. We didn't have email back then or anything else, and put out a good elevator pitch, wanted to build this worldwide organization for young entrepreneurs. And he took me on as a free client. He said, all right, I'm going to teach you what I taught Steve. And the key thing he taught Steve was whenever you have to get anything accomplished, you take a piece of paper out and you make a list of the top 25 influencers that you need, brands, people, that you need to bolt on to whatever it is you're trying to do.
Sure.
And then that'll help it scale. And he said, look, the bigger the names, the bigger the brands, the faster you will scale. And so that's always been my MO for everything that we have launched. And so I still have that piece of paper. It's in storage. And I wrote down, remember, it's the mid-80s, I wrote down President Ronald Reagan. He was number one on my list. I'm going to get him
that's a big fish.
First president to utter the word entrepreneur. Then Steve was number two, Jobs. Michael Dell was number three. And then I looked at publications, and clearly Inc. Magazine, still a force today,
sure.
And Venture Magazine. And I had to then spend an hour every week figuring out, all right, who owns those two? And late Bernie Goldhurst ended up becoming a very dear friend. And Arthur Lipper Venture is still a dear friend today, living in La Jolla, California. Just saw him about a year ago. And it's all about making the list and working it. So when Steve Jobs launched iTunes, or knew he needed to, he took his piece of paper out, made a list. By the way, didn't know anyone on the list. Nobody would return his phone calls. The egos in that industry are huge. But he knew the drummer for the Eagles and Henley. And he had him come over to his house, did the famous walk and talk. And then he said, hey, you know anybody on this list? And he goes, yeah, I know that guy. And that's how he worked down through the list and became the king of music distribution.
So let's go to your list, because having Don Henley as a friend is certainly a great asset to have. And that's a great way to open it. But when you're starting fresh, you've got, I feel like making the list, maybe it's not easy, but you know, you should take some time and be strategic. Once you have that list, what's the secret to, what are you doing in that hour when you're looking at one person on that list to say, hey, here's how I'm going to crack the code to get through to Steve Jobs?
Yeah. Well, you know, today you guys have LinkedIn, we have EO, YPO, through those networks, you can get to almost anybody. But back then we didn't have those tools. Remember, I'm a student at Wichita State University, and I think I'm going to get President Ronald Reagan on board. But what you do, and all those other people I listed, and then what you do is you sit down and say, all right, who do I know that can get to them? And I remember particularly Arthur Lipper, it was focusing on, all right, where's Arthur going to be? So I've got all the venture magazines. I see he's going to be speaking in Dallas, and that's 6 hours south of Wichita. So I get in my 81 Pontiac. I drive south, and I talk my way into the event. I sit in the front seat, you know, front of the room, and nod my head a lot and approached it with a good pitch. And that was my first foray to Arthur. Now, there is a lot more to that, but the key is you've got to give before you take. And I'm not there to ask. There's more. Hey, Arthur, you know, here's some things you talked about in your speech. They align with some things we're doing. How might we help you get your message out and extend your brand to? It's like, and I remember using the analogy, you know, American Express gave me a credit card in 1982, and I've been a member since.
Ever since.
Said, you know, how do we get Venture Magazine in the hands of students? Because then they're going to be loyal. And that made sense to Arthur, and he was willing to give me some more time. And again, a lot more tricks there to it, but you've got to give before you try to take. And I think people approach folks, you know, with their hand out, and you want to be focusing on them, their favorite topic. And so those are some of the key things that Regis taught in Relationship Marketing, the name of his famous book.
Well, I think that's very wonderful and poignant and just simple, right? Is that you need to be serving, not selling. I can't tell you, and I'm sure you're seeing this as well, probably 10X, but how many people hit you up on LinkedIn and they're selling on that first message? It has nothing to do with me as the recipient. It's all about them as the giver. So I'm glad to hear you're talking about that. So let's talk about where you started all of this from. You are an entrepreneur at heart. So I'm curious, do you think entrepreneurship is something that is binary? You either have it or you don't, or do you think people can actually grow into that?
No, I think there's aspects. It's always a nature nurture situation. Yep. With leadership and anything. There's varying degrees of it. And I think it can be brought out of folks, even being entrepreneurs. Gary Hamel's new book, Humanocracy, is really about unleashing that business leader that's within all of us. And all the books about everyone a leader and all the variations on the theme, I think, are true. And then there are some real practical skills. We think we've codified a bunch of them in my book, Scaling Up, because there really wasn't a manual for how to do that before we started to create it at that MIT program. And so there's some education, just like Regis McKenna, taught me what I needed to do to ultimately 36 months later be hosting one of the biggest speeches and first speech Steve Jobs gave after being fired from Apple. That's crazy to think some student at Wichita State can pull that off.
Okay. Well, that's a good, as I hold up your book here, Scaling Up, good product placement.
Yeah, turn it upside down. That's scaling down. So that's,
we'll try that again. Scaling Up, nice product placement in the background. You've talked about the difference, or the importance of separating marketing and sales. And I think a lot of organizations really just kind of lump those together. So can you share your thoughts on why those should be separated?
Well, and again, that was a real lesson from Regis McKenna. And it's because it really requires, first, not one person can do both because they require really fundamentally different skills. Right. A person who leads marketing, what are going to be the things that they study and focus on? And it's going to be mathematics and physics and statistics. And a lot of folks get all hung up that Steve Jobs was into calligraphy, but his real love was physics and history. Very analytical topics.
Right.
It's one of the reasons why I kind of, at some level, had the personality of that wall in terms of being a people person. Yeah. On the flip side, sales folks, what do they major in college? Go to the bar and playing pool and table tennis and very important, right. Life skills in order to make connection with folks. So they're absolutely two different approaches and skill sets. And if you lump them together, or if you're not clear, marketing just ends up becoming glorified sales support. And so in essence, marketing's role is to provide the data and the intel and the lists, the analytics, if you would, to the salespeople so that their efforts can be channeled properly. Because if you don't channel salespeople's efforts, they just need a hit. I'm just going to sell to anybody I can at some level. I don't care what the price or the margin or anything. I just need a hit.
Right.
And that'll defocus the company faster than anything else. So they're critical, salespeople, to grow the company, but they can defocus if they're not given the definitive list to go after by marketing and the information they need in order to land that sale, which comes from marketing.
Okay, so let's talk about an element you brought up there, which is there's the saying, if you're all things to everyone, you're nothing to everyone. So let's talk about the importance of really spending time to narrow that focus. And I'd like to take this from the standpoint of where we are today, because we're in a very tumultuous environment. And as much as I think, especially going back into May, I think McKinsey and Company came out with this wonderful chart that said, hey, if we did everything, from a health standpoint and an economic standpoint, we're going to have a V-shape. I think we're seeing we're not in a V-shape, and we don't know what it's going to be. And by the time this comes out, an election will already have been had. Maybe it won't be decided yet. What is the importance of really doubling down on narrowing that target audience so that you're not too far and too diluted?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot behind that question, Joshua. And I think first is to realize, and I'm going to borrow one of my favorite book titles, Marshall Goldsmith, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Okay. And that's why there really is this chasm you have to cross it. Jeffrey Moore, who studied under Regis McKenna, by the way, You know, he wrote that famous book. You know, in the very beginning, if you're in startup, you're just going to sell like hell. You're going to sell to anyone you can. And if somebody asks you if you can do it, you just say yes, even if you can't. Right. And you run back and you drive your team crazy. Hey, I just signed us up for this. Boss, but do we get, well, we need the revenue. So from zero to a million, you just sell to whoever will buy. Right. But once you cross that chasm, now is when you have to decide, all right, I've got to say no a lot more than yes. And that's when you want to begin to narrow down to primarily focus on what I call profit share versus market share. I think everybody messes up thinking they ever want market share. Nobody wants market share. And if you think about it, the largest market cap company in the world, Apple, only at the first time they achieved that 2 months prior to Steve's untimely death, they only had 7% market share, Joshua, but they had 50% of all the profit in the share. Speed forward all this decade plus later, they're at a whopping 14%. 86% of folks on the planet still think they ought to have something other than an iPhone. yet they own almost 70% of the profitability of the industry. So we actually have what's called the 770 rule. What you want to do is find the right 10% of any market, the customers you want to go after, and then you want to own that niche. The riches are in the niches, as we say. So I'll give you one example. I was in Tampa a few weeks ago addressing a whole bunch of HVAC plumbing electrical contractors and happened to have dinner with one of our EO members, Don Tenque, who's got a plumbing business called MPA. And he started out doing plumbing, electrical, and HVAC for anybody who needed it done. But then he discovered, and he was looking to where the puck was going. Where was the growth?
Right.
And in Tampa, there's like 900 folks moving from the Northeast, particularly right now, down to Florida every day. And they are older and wanting out of their McMansions and moving into multifamily, just for the ease of yard work and everything else.
Sure.
And so he's decided, looking at the market, to focus, hyper-focus. And all he does is new multifamily construction, plumbing, HVAC, and electrical. That's it. He says no to everything else. And he's grown that to 30 million just in the Tampa market with insane margins. And because he only does the one thing, he can be the best at it. And he can be formulaic about it. And he can get bids out quick. And he can then pay his people more because he knows how to do the business properly, better than anyone else who's jumping around from all kinds of things. So the riches are in those kind of niches.
Well, that's good. I like it. It reminds me of a saying I used to give to my team, which is you don't know what you're going to say until you know who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And so the value of really identifying that specific target audience allows you to really cater your messaging, your offering, your product, and everything to that specific group, which to your point, now you can scale that up exponentially within that sector.
And by the way, the variation on that theme is geography. You know, we just hosted on our virtual summit a few weeks ago, Nate, one of the co-founders of Airbnb. And I first met Nate a few years ago in Barcelona when he and I were speaking opposite each other at the big Mobile World Conference. And that's when I first really heard the story, how they had messed around to get it with the bell. And so they finally talked their way into Y Combinator. They were actually not accepted at first by Paul Graham. And finally, Paul, out of frustration, went to the guy and said, all right, where's your biggest market? And they're like, well, everywhere. No, he goes, you don't understand the question. Right now, where do you have the most customers? Let me ask it the different way. He says, well, we've got 20 people who've got places they're willing to let others use in New York City. That's the city we got the most. Now they're out in California. So he goes, look, the three of you guys, pack your bags, you're moving to New York, and you're going to first of all figure out why this business model is not working.
Yeah.
And they did. They had two simple changes they needed to make. And then I want you to stay in New York until, in this case, he took it from 20 customers to 200. They had to make it local first, someplace, even though they always knew they'd be a global company. And I see that mistake made all the time in startups. So, you know, the riches are in the niches. Sometimes it just, you got to secure the base and make it local first before trying to do it all over the place.
Because you may have to make adjustments to a playbook in a different geographical section.
Well, yes, but also it's just focused effort. There's something about the collisions and being able to get critical mass in just one place.
Sure.
That's why it's important.
Okay. So I want to talk about, you've talked about the importance of kind of differentiation and really finding your own unique voice. So I want to ask a question which goes to how that comes about, which is, what are your recommendations or what is your own personal path to thinking outside of the box, right? Because I think it's easy for us to see a business, but what are the ways that we then take that business and really make it unique within our space?
Well, first, I want to underpin what you said. And a lot of folks, first, you have to be different. And if you're not different, you're going to be commoditized. Yeah. So a lot of people say, yeah, but I am different. But I want to go all the way to pricing. If you price your product or service in roughly the same way everyone else does, don't claim you're different. Southwest Airlines even sub-branded it called transparency. They've always priced different than all the other airlines. No baggage, no change fees. The others, you know, United American are trying to catch up right now in this mess. Sure. If you deliver your product or service in roughly the same way everyone else does, don't claim you're different. And so you really have to be different in all aspects of the business. And so it starts with that mindset. Then the second thing is to make sure, and by the way, it's a really practical thing that we recommend with teams that we coach. Every one of the members of the executive team, we recommend at least once a year, go to a trade show so far in an industry so far away from your industry. Because if all you do is hang out with people in your industry, you're going to think like everyone else in your industry. Yeah. So that's number one, to get that cross-pollination and fertilization. It's one of the reasons why our coaches are effective, because people always say, yeah, but I want a coach that knows my industry. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Right.
A coach who's worked with a myriad of industries
sure.
to help cross-fertilize. Then the second is you need talk time. And when I cornered Jim Collins, who's right here in Boulder, Colorado, where I am, and we've known each other for years, and I said, Jim, look, you've studied great companies for 25 years. What is the single most important idea you've discovered that us mere mortals can use? And he goes, the counsel. That's why it's the second thing I recommend in my back of the book when you're getting started. And this is this 1 hour, mine's every Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern. 1 hour where I get some talk time with some really smart folks. It's not your whole executive team. For me, it's Ron Lovett, who's kind of our default chair of our company. It's the CEOs of my different divisions that I have a chance to really get some talk time. You can't think your way through this. You have to talk your way through it. And you can't work on it once a quarter or once a year. You've got to be discussing this stuff every week. So it's a lot of iterations with some smart people, and go out and cross fertilize across industries and focus on making sure you really are doing it different.
Well, and so that was one of my questions for you, and maybe you answered it and we had Ron on, but who is the person right now that you're looking to that helps guide you?
Well, it is Ron. So I brought him on this last year to lead our strategy session in January. We think there ought to be an outside coach, even for ourselves, even though we're in this business.
Sure.
So Ron came in and led that as an outsider. He's now chair of our council. So he's on, takes an hour of his time. Even though we're not in related industries, he's in the real estate business. And we are sort of related because he's in the HR space. And so he's been a real guide. But I'm also blessed with kind of an informal advisory board. When all this stuff went down, I was on the phone almost every day with Steve Hall. You know, Steve scaled a significant business in Dallas, sold it to a $10 billion firm, and yada, yada, yada. And Steve gave me really, you know, strong insights. Rich Manders, one of our top coaching partners. You know, there's a handful of folks in my own sphere, as well as a couple of spiritual leaders that I've got that I just reach out to regularly.
And how important is, we talk about the stresses that we've all gone through, and there's a lot. How important is it for you in a daily basis to make sure you're specifically putting effort behind work-life balance?
Well, first, we push back on the term balance. I don't think there's any balance, particularly in this mess. It's more of a blend. I mean, where is the line between work and home and personal and professional? I mean, it is absolutely gone.
Right.
For those that have been, you know, thrust into working remotely that have really not experienced that before. And so it's always, I think, a blend. But if you get back to dealing with stress, it's interesting. We had our global coaching summit last week, and I'm big on recommending books, as you know. There's 40 of them referred to just in my book. I hardly have all the answers. And I recommended two books, one personally and one professionally. Professionally, you and I were talking about it just a moment before, Gary Hamel's Humanocracy, really how do we make everyone a leader? And then personally, a new book called Breathe. I think probably the most important instruction I've ever received that's helped me through all of the crazy times was spending some time at this ashram in Bangalore by Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, who has what's called the Art of Living. And there's Art of Living programs in almost every city in the world.
Okay.
And what they fundamentally do is teach you how to breathe. And particularly in the Western world, we've lost that skill of knowing how to breathe deeply. They think it's one of the reasons why people smoke is because what they're really doing is trying to get a breath. One of the reasons people get real addicted to cardio work is that's the only time that they get out of their shallow breathing, and our body hungers for it. So really learning how to breathe properly. And I'm even using these Somnifix sleep strips to take my mouth closed at night. It's been crazy how my sleep scores up have improved dramatically.
Yeah.
The floor ring by just making sure I'm breathing properly at night and through my nose and not my mouth. So knowing how to breathe is life. And we need to learn how to do it right.
Yeah, no, I think certainly in Western society, there's a level of complacency that we've all fallen into. Well, I know we have a hard stop, so I actually have several more. So maybe we can get you on again. I had Sasha Strauss and John Rulin on a couple second episodes. I want to pivot because this is one that I think could actually take up a whole episode. And it's one that I'm passionate about, and I know you're certainly passionate about as a co-founder, which is your university. Or this is Geoversity. It's a program that you co-founded, and it's just rooted in all sorts of wonderfulness. So I'd like to just ask, what spawned it, and where do you see that going? Because I really do feel like it's a wonderful program you have.
Well, the short of it is, I was looking for a place to invest in real estate. I got international living, discovered Panama would be a great place to get that kind of, you know, real bump. And so I began making some investments there at the turn of the century. And a good friend of mine, Jeff Workman, said, hey, if you're going to be hanging out in Panama, you need to meet Nathan Gray. And Nathan worked directly alongside Mother Teresa. He was then responsible for bringing Oxfam to the United States. And then he ended up down there in what I consider, we branded the most accessible jungle in all of North America. And that's right there, the jungles of Panama. They're really critical to everything that's life within this entire part of the hemisphere. And so we came together and said, look, let's form an organization called Geoversity.
Okay.
It's kind of mirroring Singularity University.
Yeah.
And we said, let's be the place where they've got silicon, we focus on carbon, and where silicon and carbon or humans and technology can come together. And the essence is we bring executives down to the jungle and we let them learn what nature has to instruct us in scaling. Look, nature is scaled much more rapidly and bigger in any way than what we mere human beings thought we could achieve.
Right.
So let's learn from them. And a little side note, one thing we're clear, and I wrote a paper on it. I decided not to publish it because it's just too political, but no hive, beehive or ant colony would do to itself what we've allowed to be done to us in this pandemic. Right. And they've been dealing with pandemics for millions of years. We've only been dealing with it for a couple thousand years. So we don't know where the sinister forces are. We have some ideas and all of that, but this is insane because we have done more harm to the hive than what this virus ever would have. And it's purely because it's been politicized, and it sickens us in the work that we do. So,
well, I applaud you for founding it. I think it's a great organization, and I think that was going to continue to scale. And what I love about it is it's going to scale the impact on human life. And that, to me, at the end of the day, is what's really most important.
You bet.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Vern. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.
Hi, it's your host, Joshua Carlson, and I wanted to thank you for listening to today's show. This is the point where most shows ask you for a 5-star review, but we're not doing this for the accolades. Don't get me wrong, seeing 5 stars feels great, but our goal here is to provide real content from real experts that can meaningfully propel you and your business forward. So if there's something we fell short on, a question we missed, or if you just have any constructive feedback, go ahead and leave a review with your thoughts. We also enjoy hearing directly from our listeners, so look for our contact info via the show notes so we can connect one-on-one. We really do love the feedback so we can continue to improve and propel the show forward for you and all of our listeners.